Hi, this is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Lori Elster, and this is the All Access Star Trek podcast. We are basically doing an all-news podcast today because Wednesday the 24th was the big Investor Day event for Paramount Plus, Viacom, CBS. We learned everything about all the new Star Trek shows that are coming. So actually, we didn't learn everything, but we're going to talk about what we did and didn't learn. And let's cover a little bit of other news first before we really dive in, starting with some book announcements.
There is another Star Trek Picard book coming out. So this will be the second tie-in for this year. In May, there's going to be a Discovery book. The Picard book is coming out in July. It's called Rogue Element. It's by John Jackson Miller, who did a really good book last year called Die Trying for Discovery. And this is going to be the Rios backstory, which his time after Starfleet. And it sounds pretty intriguing.
Yeah, is that the kind of thing that you are interested in?
Yeah. I mean, that's what these books are good for. And I think here's a way to look at this, which is since they're doing the Rios backstory, I feel like the Seven backstory is going to be on the show, which is something that we talked about with James Swallow when he was talking about his book from January, which was the Riker and Troy story. So they're holding back the Seven backstory, and I feel like that season two is going to give us some more what happened to Seven after Voyager, but that's just a speculation.
Yeah, I hope so. What I'd like book-wise is I'd like the Hugh story. I hope somebody will tackle that.
There's some other book news. As we talked about with James Swallow, there were all of these Star Trek books written after Star Trek Nemesis when there was no movies, no TV show. And so all the book writers basically got to do whatever they wanted, right? And so Picard got married and he had a kid and Riker went off on the Titan and Riker became an admiral and all sorts of crazy stuff. All of those books stopped in 2019 because Picard was coming and they basically didn't agree with the new canon being defined by Picard. So now what Pocket is doing, though, because there's a lot of fans of these books, I mean, there's been dozens of them, is they're going to do three books this year that tie into this kind of Star Trek lit verse that don't tie into Picard, that are set, you know, in that decade after. And they're going to be called the Coda Trilogy, and it's Dayton Ward, James Swallow, and David McElwright, the final one. And I think that's going to be that for the lit verse. And then from now on, they're going to be doing books like the Picard tie-in and other things that are more tied into their kind of new 24th century and beyond.
I like that they got very collaborative about it, that they sat there together trying to map it all out, and that they kind of see it as stories. Like, it's each book is individually written, but I think they all collaborated on the stories kind of together, which I really like.
Yep.
It's like a writer's room, but for the books.
Exactly. Another little bit of book news you can check out on the site. For some reason, 11 years after he wrote it, or 12 years after he wrote his memoir, A View from the Bridge, Nicholas Meyer is now doing an audiobook version, and he narrates it in his style. He's got this very kind of dry style, and we got a clip of it on the site, and that comes out next week, so in March 2nd.
And we don't know why he suddenly decided this was the thing to do, or somebody decided this was the thing to do.
No idea. Probably someone approached him and said, "Hey, you know, you want to do this?" He's like, "Sure, why not?" You know. So
yeah,
there's a little. It's not movie news, but it's movie adjacent news. It was an interview with Brent Spiner talking about his upcoming memoir in quotes, because it's kind of like this.
It's a jokey memoir.
It's a jokey memoir. He's writing about a kind of fictionalized version of himself because Brent Spiner never wants to talk seriously. So he'd prefer to create a fake version of himself.
Don't we all?
In this interview on Sci-Fi, and we've got a link to it, set, he says that he's expecting there to be a reboot of the Star Trek The Next Generation. on the big screen.
With new cast. So, with young actors, he said.
Yeah.
Right.
So
did they ask him who he thought would play him? They didn't ask him to speculate?
No, I don't think. No, he just said, you know, he kind of joked that he, you know, at first, like, he wouldn't like it, but he said he'd be cool with it. He thinks it would be cool. So, I don't know. This is a, that's an interesting topic of what to do in the movies next. So I think maybe we should do a whole pod about that. What do you say?
Yeah, I think we should.
There is, believe it or not, we're going to get more into this later, but there is a little bit of Section 31 news, kind of, from an interview done with Bo-Yun Kim and Erica Lippold, who are writing partners on Discovery, and they're the showrunners of the what should be the Section 31 series, but doesn't exist yet. And even though there's no official this is when it's coming, you know, Paramount Plus are still saying it's in development. So in an interview, the most interesting thing they said when they were talking about if they could do anything they wanted, what would they want to do? Bowie said, there's not a lot we can't do on Section 31 that we'd be dying to do somewhere else, which I thought was interesting. It sounds like they're given a bit of free rein. And when you look at other things they said in the interview of what their ultimate favorite thing that they, you know, most influential thing for them, they reference Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, multiple times, actually, and that they'd like to do something like that. So, which is obviously a very serious show, highly serialized show, and kind of a dark show. And Erica's talked about how her favorite Star Trek is Star Trek DS9. Putting the pieces together, you know, which shouldn't be a surprise, this DS9, this Section 31 show could be pushing the limits, could be a kind of darker show. What do you think?
I mean, by the time it finally happens, we might be ready for that again. I think the tone has shifted in terms of what people are looking for and want. And so I think when they first thought of this idea and started talking about it, that was sort of the thing, was these darker shows. And then we moved into a phase where people are like, I don't want this big dark show. But it's still a ways away. And I think there's still some time to work out what people are going to appreciate, I guess. I mean, what I thought was interesting about that interview was that they just covered some of the background as well of the early origins and things that people thought were initially planned to show Section 31 were not.
Right. I think we talked about that on the pod. Someone brought up the badges in episode 3, and I just guessed that they were just black badges. They hadn't worked out Section 31 yet. And they confirmed that, yeah, at that time, they weren't, but now they are. They've kind of retroactively decided, oh yeah, those were Section 31 badges.
Right. Like, we have them, so we can use them again. I mean, but do you remember when we first saw, I guess, the ship, the serial number is 1031, and people thought that was Section 31.
Right. As opposed to the real reason, which
Halloween.
Is... Halloween. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, totally banal, you know, totally different. But you can see why people would think that. I mean, I get the theory. Anyway.
Yeah. I was very dismissive of all that stuff. And then, of course, here came Section 31. So what do you think of them doing a dark show like that?
Well, as part of this cornucopia of Star Trek, I'm fine with it depending on what they mean by dark. I guess this gets, I think the character... because this is really the Michelle Yeoh show, lends itself to something darker because she comes from the mirror universe. And even though she's not a homicidal maniac, or at least not anymore, I think that you're kind of stuck with it in a way. And they can make it work, but I don't want a show that's, you know, depressing, I guess. So that they've got to figure out a way to make it dark and Star Trek at the same time.
Yeah, and it gets back to something you actually talked about last week on the podcast, about how fans really want to believe in Starfleet. I'm one of those people, for sure. So I don't want to see this whole dark side of Starfleet doing bad, underhanded things and killing people.
Well, and I don't think we ever will see Starfleet do that, but we may see them do these kind of underhanded things on behalf of Starfleet, which is kind of the whole point of Section 31.
Right, which is why I've never been a big fan of it. But who knows? I would love it if they were to explore it in a way that I could find interesting. I'd be very, I always want to like it. So right. Before I start, you know, with my protest signs and my sandwich boards, I'll watch and see what happens.
So let's pivot to everything we learned yesterday. So all the stuff about Section 31 was actually from a magazine interview. The interview was conducted actually months ago. So this is not, you know, it's new because we're doing an article on it, but it isn't from yesterday. Yesterday, at the Paramount Plus presentation, there was actually no mention of Section 31, although there was an oblique mention of it in an article in Variety saying, yeah, that's still on the table, basically. We're still talking about it.
But it has not gone into production. They're not looking specifically at starting it up right away. They want to get through all of what they're doing now first.
Let's talk about the kind of first news that came out of the thing, which was about Star Trek Prodigy. We finally got our first actual look at the show beyond the logo. You know, we finally now get a sense of what the show's going to look like, which is just a character image of the six crew members, I guess you'd call them.
Yes.
I mean, I like it. I mean, we're not part of the target market. Obviously, this is a kid's show. But I think it looks good. It kind of looks like what I expected. The big surprise here is they're all aliens.
Yeah, it's about time. I like that.
And not just aliens that, well, one of them looks like a robot, actually. But it could be an alien in a robot body or something like that. But they're not familiar aliens. They are all very alien aliens. So this is an entirely new thing, basically. We still don't know exactly where the show is set in the timeline, where the show is set in the galaxy, or even in another galaxy. We have no idea. It's described as six young outcasts who commandeer a abandoned Starfleet ship. The description is, over the course of their adventures together, they will each be introduced to Starfleet and the ideals it represents.
Well, you came up with an interesting theory yesterday in our Trek movie Slack about how you thought Kate Mulgrew would factor into this. That made a lot of sense to me. Why don't you
right.
Just say?
I mean, as we talked about a few weeks ago, Kate Mulgrew is confirmed to be part of the show. There's no image of what her character looks like, which is noteworthy. And so this is one of those things of, you know, if you can't put the pieces together in a normal sense, like, so you have this alien, all of these aliens who are cool looking and stuff, but definitely not familiar. Then we have Janeway, who we know becomes an admiral after she returns. So, and we have this, you know, so how can all these aliens take over a Starfleet ship? Wouldn't they have to, you know, wouldn't Starfleet want it back? You know, I mean, it's like, so it's, you know, you have to think it's probably not in the Federation. So I'm thinking the Janeway that's on the ship isn't actually Janeway. It's a hologram of Janeway on the ship. And this hologram of Janeway, you know, teaches them how to use the ship, teaches them about Starfleet, teaches them about friendship and, you know, all of those great things.
And so coffee. We'll introduce them to coffee.
Exactly. And I think they once referred to her as Captain Janeway, you know, which could have been, you know, that, you know, but they say, you know, when you think of Janeway, you think of her as Captain Janeway, even though she was Admiral Janeway for 45 seconds. So in Star Trek Nemesis.
Right. In one conversation.
Right. But, you know, if this is set in the, you know, 24th century after Nemesis, she's supposed to be Admiral Janeway unless she got demoted. So, I don't know. I think that'd be kind of cool. you know, so she's, so they kind of go off on their adventures. Maybe they come back and they have these talks with her. I mean, maybe she could be anywhere on the ship. One would hope it's not just like in the holodeck, like she could appear anywhere. One would hope, and give them advice and talk to them.
Right. Teach them the ways. Yeah, I thought that was a good theory. It makes a lot of sense to me. Like, as soon as you, I was going to say said it, but as soon as you typed it, I thought, oh yeah, no, that fits with what we know about the show. What did you think of the artwork? What did you think of the characters?
Well, I really like it because they're all very different. Each of the six characters, one of them's like a blob. One of them is this giant kind of looks a little bit like the Thing. Mm-hmm. A friendlier version of the Thing from the Fantastic Four. The there's a kind of a leader character which looks a little bit like an elf actually from Middle Earth. Maybe she there's like a pair like a it could be brother and sister. Maybe they're the same alien species. Yeah, it's hard to tell.
They're sort of long and lean and skinny.
Right. Then there's like a short, fat, troll looking friendly engineer guy. You know, it's hard to describe, but he's clearly the engineer of the group. And because he's covered in tools, and he's got a robotic arm, which is kind of cool. And then there's a robot, I guess, or a thing. I mean, I think it's like, it could be, here's my theory on it. I think it's like an entity that lives inside a robot. Maybe it's like a, you know, but we have no idea, but it definitely, because it's got this like window in it and there's this glowing thing coming out of it. Again, you know, go to the website so you can, you know, yeah. Us describing these things it's is silly, but
not that fulfilling,
but it's CG animated. If you're familiar with Trollhunters, which is the guys behind this show, this is all in that kind of vein. And I think, I think these things will appeal to kids. We still, you know, I think the voice acting is going to be critical here, and the animation itself. We have so little to work off of. But, you know, when the first time I saw it, I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So
I like how different everybody looks. What I'm hoping is that it's not, because we have the image and we don't know male, female. And when I look at that big thing-like creature in the overalls, I'm hoping that's a female character, actually, because I like sort of spinning things. And when I, what looks, if I just go by looks and I go, well, it looks like there's one female character, which I somehow don't think they would have only one, but it's like a skinny chick, which I'm sort of tired of. And I think for kids also, we need to get away from the skinny woman, all women have to be skinny thing. So even alien women, I'm sort of tired of it. So I hope that like maybe the blob is female, or the big giant thing is female, or the robot. But something that people would think of as traditionally male, I hope they flip that.
I can't imagine they have a voice cast of five men and one. Yeah. Female. And so, yeah, I'm betting, you know, although, you know, can like gelatinous blobs be male or female? But, you know, they.
Good point. The one on the Orville is male.
Definitely male. Now that, yeah. So, anyway, I looking forward to the show. There was an interesting, so David Mack, who's a Star Trek author, but he's also kind of a consultant, and you know, he knows more about Star Trek than anyone. And he's been working as a consultant on various Star Trek projects, including this show. So after the reveal, he went on Twitter and he replied to some of the other people who work on the show, talking about how he feels lucky and proud. But he said that this is one of the greatest projects he's ever had the privilege to be part of. And he said he believes that Prodigy is Star Trek's future. I mean, his glowing tweets about this show. And if you know David Mack, he's not that kind of guy, you know.
He's not a glowy kind of dude.
Right. He's not this kind of. So there's something about this show. And we've talked about how, like, we, you know some of the writers are real Trek fans. So, you know, there may be something here. This may be better than we realize, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's a quite the endorsement from Mr. Mac. I mean, I know he works on it and stuff, but it was unusual glowing from
him. Yeah, the big quote from him was, he said, 50 years from now, there will be middle-aged Star Trek fans who will say they fell in love with Star Trek because of Prodigy.
Yeah.
Which is a lovely and bold statement.
Absolutely.
We should get into some of the details of it, right? That we know that there are 20 episodes have been ordered. The plan is to put 10 on Paramount Plus, and when those 10 have finished airing, at some point, they haven't decided exactly what the time frame will be, then they'll move that over to Nickelodeon. And they want it on Nickelodeon because they want kids who are just sitting there watching kids' shows to see it versus assuming that Star Trek fans will hunt it down and find it.
I'm sure all of our loyal listeners know that that's news, that it's going to be on Paramount Plus, because you know, we've been saying this is a Nickelodeon show. And if you think back, this show was announced before Viacom and CBS remerged. So this was CBS was selling a Star Trek show to Nickelodeon originally. That was plan A. It was not going to be on CBS All Access. They were two separate companies. Then when they merged, it still looked like it was going to be a Nickelodeon thing and it would show up on Paramount Plus later. Right, which they're doing with a lot of the Nickelodeon content. So the news yesterday is, no, they've decided to flip it around. It's going to be on Paramount Plus first. And, of course, this makes sense because the promotions they're doing for the Star Trek universe is, you know, every show, every season, every show, every episode of Star Trek is on Paramount Plus. And they don't want to have an asterisk on there that says, except for Prodigy, which shows up on Nickelodeon first, right? So they've done it the other way around, and now it is a Paramount Plus original series coming in 2021. We don't know exactly when. My bet is, I'm just going to say the summer. I'm just going to bet the summer, but I have no idea.
Then I'm going to say the summer also. Because you
said
it. You're often right about these things. And the other interesting thing that I thought, Alex Kurtzman said that he said something like, hopefully if it's successful or in success, I forget what the phrase was, that this will be the first of many in the kids space of Star Trek shows, which I thought was interesting.
I mean, it solves a problem, I think, with Star Trek in that Star Trek's demographic skews too old. And they are using this show as a entry vehicle to get people interested in Star Trek, I think, again.
I was going to say also for merchandising, I would assume.
Yes, kind of a separate piece of news. The head of merchandise for Viacom, CBS, is one of their goals this year is to roll out Star Trek Prodigy and reintroduce Star Trek merchandise to a new generation to try to create kid appeal Star Trek merchandise. So we should be looking forward to, you know, kid stuff for tied to Prodigy. We don't know what that entails yet, but so much of Star Trek merchandise now is geared for collectors and adults, and that's an active marketplace, but it's not the kind of, mass market, kids market kind of stuff.
Right.
But I don't think this isn't the kind of show made to sell toys. I think the toys are an extra. There are shows that are essentially, you know, toy commercials. And I don't think that's what this is. I think this is more something to broaden the Star Trek fan base. Although there was, you know, one of the quotes came from Julie McNamara, is one of the executives at CBS. And she said when they were looking at data, they noticed that a lot of people on CBS All Access who watched Star Trek also watched the animated series Legends of Korra. And so it's interesting how they are using this user data to help them decide what kind of shows to make. And that also helped them decide that they should bring this to Paramount Plus.
I had a moment when you said looking at data, and I was imagining Data and them all looking at Data. And maybe you were going to say the Data toys sold better. I was like, where are we going with this? But that isn't what you were talking about.
Exactly. And there's a lot of, you know, some fans are saying, noticing that they're using phrases like, this is the first Star Trek show built for family and kids, and say, oh, what about the animated show? And that's true. I mean, my gateway drug to Star Trek was the animated series. It was a Saturday morning cartoon. But
that's so funny.
What?
That was your gateway?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Wow.
The animated series, I think, works for adults and kids. I mean, some of the episodes were written by some of the same writers. And was it a kid's show? Do you think of it as a kid's show, the animated series? It wasn't adult animation, but it wasn't.
Well, that's the problem, was the animation itself was very kid series. And yet and a lot of the dialogue was very simplified. You know, it's like simplified original series. Like if you took all the nuance out of it.
Right.
But I don't know that it was much of a kid's show, but I was watching the original series, you know, when I was 10 and devouring it. So, I mean, I was a kid. Is that a kid's show? No.
I think this will fit much more in Prodigy into kind of the kid. They're going to be learning lessons. There's going to be a lot about, I'm guessing, diversity and acceptance and all sorts of very touchy-feely things that a lot of modern kids shows get into. So,
but then again, Star Trek has always done that kind of thing. So just making it, I mean, it's a younger kids is something to think about.
Right.
That's what they're aiming.
All the characters on the animated series were adults. You know, the thing about this show is they're all, it's a kids show for kids about kids.
Right.
You know, which is what makes it more for kids than Star Trek the animated series.
And is what's definitely missing from the franchise, filling a hole for sure. Before we want to jump into the specific Star Trek information that we know based on what went on yesterday and the articles that came out, let's just talk about Paramount Plus in general and just the basics.
On March 4th, CBS All Access ceases to exist and will become Paramount Plus, which is the new streaming home for Viacom CBS. And it's their kind of big reintroduction to the world of streaming. And it's going to be a new app. It's going to have new features. Because let's face it, the CBS All Access app is old and creaky. And this will bring them up to speed. It'll have 4K. Their kind of marketing and their positioning of this, they constantly are saying it's news, it's sports, and it's, quote, a mountain of entertainment, which is the part we're probably mostly interested in. But it is a differentiator when you look at this versus the Peacock app or HBO Max, especially, which has no sports and no news at all and costs even more. At launch, they're going to have 30,000 episodes across various shows and 2,500 movies, which is a lot of movies. That's like way more than they have now. It's pricing. The top tier, the ad-free tier, will remain the same price, which is $9.99 or $9.95 or whatever, so $10. And then the lower tier price, the with ad price, is going to go down from $6 to $5. There's a few things that you get with the no ad one that you don't get with the ad one. You'll get all the Star Trek shows and most of the shows, but there's some news and sports. And you won't get your local CBS affiliate, which is kind of a big deal for some people who like to use the app to watch their local CBS affiliate. So the $5 version won't have that. So that's all the kind of, you know, high level stuff. They announced quite a lot of original programming.
Original and not so original. Lots of reboots.
Well, I mean, this is not, I mean, basically all of the streaming offerings are asking people to pay a premium. And what I think they're all finding is that people are willing to pay premiums for things they're familiar with. And so there tend to be a lot of reboots or sequels or that kind of thing. And we've seen this with other ones, and it's going to be no different with Paramount Plus. I mean, Star Trek itself was what they used to launch CBS All Access and will, of course, be a big part of Paramount Plus. But looking at all the programming, what were there any that jumped out at you that you were kind of like, oh, that's cool, I'm looking forward to that?
Well, I mean, the reboots, I got to say, I just found sort of irritating. Too many of them. Nothing really popped for me. How about you?
Well, in the drama section, I'm interested in so they announced yesterday that there's going to be a live action Halo series, which had previously been advanced for Showtime, but is now going to be on Paramount Plus. I'm interested in that because I'm into gaming. And so, I'm looking forward to the Man Who Fell to Earth reboot. That's going to be another Alex Kurtzman show. There's a tie-in to The Godfather.
Oh yeah, that looked interesting to me.
Yeah. And there's some good names behind that. We've talked about how they're going to be mining the Paramount library. So the first mining of the Paramount library to turn it into TV shows are from the following movies: Flashdance, Love Story, the Italian Job, which I think could be cool. That one I'm kind of interested in. The Parallax View, again, I kind of like stuff like that. But the original programming on the drama side is, I don't know, looks like some interesting stuff, some sci-fi stuff. Now, interestingly, they confirmed yesterday there's going to be no more Twilight Zone. So they did two seasons of the new Twilight Zone, and that's it. They're not going to do any more of that.
That doesn't surprise me, because I liked some of it, didn't like some of it, was going to watch all of it, and just didn't yet.
There's a lot of stuff on Paramount Plus coming that I may not be interested in, but I think are good. You know, there's a reboot of iCarly that's going to bring in people. The Rugrats, everyone was talking about the Rugrats.
You're not excited about the iCarly reboot, Tony?
No. there's a lot of unscripted stuff that they're bringing back The Real World.
Trevor Noah has a new weekly show coming that I might be interested in.
That could be good for sure. On the comedy side, probably the biggest news yesterday is they confirmed the rumors that Frasier's coming back with Kelsey Grammer, who's, you know, better known for his role in Star Trek, of course.
Of course. Captain Bateson, man.
Exactly. But that's, you know, that's going to be big, obviously. Beavis and Butthead, you know, are coming back. Amy Schumer, this is going to be Reno 911. I love Reno 911. There's some other new stuff. There's a 60-minute spinoff. I like 60 Minutes. There's some new documentaries coming. There's a Watergate one.
I'd watch too.
Believe it or not, I think they'd want to announce more, especially more scripted drama. But because of COVID, there's just kind of less going on in the last year. And so there'll probably be more stuff being announced as we go forward. But they have an impressive lineup coming down the road. I haven't added them all up, but it looks like there's going to be an equal or greater amount of original programming on this app than there is on HBO Max or even Disney Plus. Certainly Disney Plus, which really doesn't have that much original programming yet.
No, and also if you look at early, like CBS All Access when it launched, I mean, there were a lot of us who basically subscribed to watch Star Trek, and there wasn't a whole lot of other stuff in there.
Yeah.
So this is a huge, I mean, they've had some changes and they've added a lot of things since then, but this is obviously meant to really be out there competing with all the other players in the big leagues.
And on the movie side, besides the kind of library of, you know, hundreds of movies, new theatrical releases will arrive some 45 days after release, like Quiet Place 2, I believe the Top Gun movie, which is a pretty short window for them to show up on a streaming service.
I think the smart thing would be to announce those dates as quickly as possible so that people will want to subscribe.
For sure. Yeah. And there'll be more of that. So there is going to be a bigger tie, much bigger tie into Paramount Pictures than there ever has been. If you think like a year ago, there was like nothing, you know, and now there's a couple hundred movies and there's going to be even more and more, which all makes sense, of course. So they're planning on taking this global. So it'll be Paramount Plus around the world. There actually is already something called Paramount Plus in Latin America, which is a smaller offering, but that'll be expanded on March 4th. And this year they're also launching in the Nordic countries and in Australia and in Canada. So CBS All Access in Canada will be rebranded Paramount Plus as well. We're still not sure what Star Trek will be on where on these, because if you're getting Star Trek, a Star Trek show on Amazon or Netflix elsewhere in the world, and Paramount Plus shows up in your country, I think you still will get the Netflix or the Amazon show, but new Star Trek shows will probably end up beyond Paramount Plus, is my bet.
Right.
They're shooting for 70 million subscribers worldwide by 2024, which I think, believe it or not, is doable. They're at 30 million now globally. And if you combine all of their subscription things, which includes Showtime, they're really leaning into streaming in a big way. And so, which is all good news for Star Trek, because Paramount Plus is the home of Star Trek. And even though there are all these other things going, they've made it clear that Star Trek is a big part of Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's talk about how Star Trek fits into Paramount Plus.
Yeah, it's going to be a big part of it for a long time. So, and actually good news for us as podcasters, it sounds like we're going to have a lot of episodes to review going forward.
They're talking about the five shows, right? So there's five Star Trek shows. So let's run through those. There's Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, Prodigy, and Strange New Worlds. Those are the five. And all of them are in production as of now, which means Strange New Worlds, which we talked about recently, was about to go into production. So that's now in production as well on its first season. And they've confirmed, so this is, you know, interviews with Kurtzman and with Julie McNamara from CBS and at the presentation. So when we're talking about, they said this, it may come from Variety or the Hollywood Reporter, from a press release or from the presentation, but this is all from the last 24 hours, that the general plan is to have a new Star Trek thing on Paramount Plus every quarter, so every 3 months or so. And although they didn't say when the next thing is, right? Because the last premiere was Q4, it was October, right, of 2020. I think, you know, if COVID didn't happen, there would be something this quarter and next quarter. But right. I think because of COVID, Q1 and Q2 of 2021, there's not going to be anything new.
Maybe end of Q2? Can I hope?
Maybe end of Q2. Well, yeah, I would say, yeah. So I think end of Q2 is quite possible. And because they have confirmed that there are three things this year. So it kind of makes sense for them to try to go for Q2, Q3, Q4. My guess is it'll roll out Prodigy, Lower Decks, Season 4 of Discovery. Right? What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense.
I think in the Variety article, it did say that the fourth season of Discovery would come this year. We already knew Prodigy and Lower Decks were coming this year. So that would be three seasons of Star Trek this year, or at least starting this year. And then presumably Q1 2022 would be
Strange New Worlds. I think they're going to be anxious to get that out there.
It could either be Picard or Strange New Worlds. It depends on which one has more post-production, because they both start shooting. They're both within a week of each other. They're both 10 episodes. Who knows? I'm just going to say they're going to do Picard first. So I think Picard Q1, Strange New Worlds Q2 2022. And then for Q3, Prodigy or Lower Decks, and Q4... Prodigy or Lower Decks, right?
Yeah.
So those are the big five shows, and those are going to kind of keep Paramount Plus going for the next couple years or so. I think there's going to be two more seasons of Picard, and that'll be that.
Yeah, they actually even said something like Julia McNamara talked about a Star Trek show sort of aging out, you know, naturally, you know, the attrition of a Star Trek. So those phrases kind of make me think, yeah, that's that Picard they're thinking of as a limited series and about three seasons seems right.
Even though there's all these five Star Trek shows, they're not looking at them as this super interwoven, interconnected thing.
Not like Disney and Marvel, where it all kind of ties together.
It all ties together. They're all in the Prime universe, right? And they don't contradict each other, but they don't want to make it so that you have to watch one to watch the other one.
Right. And like, it'll be fun if you watch them all and see those connections, but it won't matter if you don't.
I'm hoping there's some crossover, or at least referencing. It's kind of surprising how little there has been. Between, say, Picard and Discovery so far.
Yeah, I mean, those shows are far enough apart. I think it's Strange New Worlds and Discovery that makes a little more sense, that Strange New Worlds will reference things from Discovery that we've seen, because it's right in that timeline. But, I mean, that's part of the reason I think Kurtzman wants to sort of look at timelines and places that don't necessarily crash into each other, because it gives them more freedom.
So another thing that came out of yesterday is that the, you know, Kurtzman and McNamara confirmed that they are already talking about the quote next phase, which is kind of a loaded term if you are a Disney fan, but I don't think they're, you know, referring to it as phase two yet, but that there's discussions about what to do next with Star Trek beyond the five shows that we've talked about already. But they did confirm that they won't launch a new Star Trek show while one of these shows is active, which makes me feel like when the Section 31 show happens, if and when, that means another show has ended.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure this is a hard and fast rule, but it kind of sounds like that.
It felt like it. From what I heard and read, it felt like that's what they were saying.
Which means almost certainly not a 2022 show if Section 31 happens. It would be a 2023 show, maybe.
And they also are really looking at these shows as, even though they're all Star Trek, as serving different audiences, which is partly as they think about platforms, right, which is where they would put them, you know, Nickelodeon being one, something like that. But also, you know, they think of Picard as definitely like for older and more serious viewers. And now they're doing kids shows and goofy comedy. So they're really trying to have genres within genre.
One of the things that came out yesterday about the five shows is a new video, which you could see on the site. It doesn't have any new footage, but it gives you a sense of how they see the current lineup of Star Trek shows, and how they describe them, I thought was really interesting. So it's Alex Kurtzman. He's narrating. Discovery was described as the show that brought the look and feel of Star Trek movies to television. So that's their flagship show. That's the kind of high production value.
That's accurate. Star Trek.
Right.
Yeah.
Picard was described as, quote, Trek's first true adult drama, which I think bristled some people because they're like, adults like Star Trek. I think what they mean by that is it's meant entirely for adults. It isn't, you know, they aren't trying to appeal to a younger audience. And let's face it, most people fell in love with their first Star Trek when they were teenagers, I think, or even younger. And
yeah, I mean, I was 10. That's when it started.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we're all adults now. And you know, we find Star Trek appealing, but Picard is geared for adults. That makes sense. Lower Decks was described, I've never heard them use this phrase before, a teenage comedy.
Call it that.
I think they're differentiating it. I mean, because they used to refer to it as an adult animated comedy, But let's face it, anyone who knows kids and stuff, you know, shows like Rick and Morty are, even though they're quote adult, they are very much trying to appeal to teenagers as well. And teenagers are watching these shows. So I think that's almost like an acknowledgement that it's a lot of teenage humor, let's face it.
I think that was a bit of a desperate grab to put it in a different demographic for the purpose of narrating that video. That's what I think. Because I wouldn't really describe it as it. I mean, there's no reason teenagers wouldn't watch it and enjoy it, but it's really just for Star Trek fans to watch and enjoy at probably any age.
Right, right. I guess it's when you're just, once you describe Picard as an adult show, it's if you then say and our adult animated comedy, it's kind right. of big. Strange New Worlds was described as the quote maiden voyages of the Enterprise, which, you know, also raises a couple of canon questions because
sure.
there was a captain before Pike, so it won't show the maiden voyage, but I mean, it's
no Captain April for you.
Right. But it's set after Discovery anyway. So, you know, it's already the ship's been around and it's already had to get fixed up once.
Yeah. I don't need to quibble about maiden voyage because it still looks like a great show. I'm excited.
Right. And Prodigy again was described as quote, the first animated Trek show for children, which we talked about before. And I still feel like that's accurate. Even as a fan of the animated series, it had, you know, the fact that it's kid characters is what really differentiates it.
Yep.
But it's a nice video. Eagle-eyed fans will notice because it shows, you know, old Trek and new Trek, that there's some Deep Space Nine in HD that came from the DS9 dock. Some people are wondering because it was like showing that while they were talking about Prodigy and whether it was related. It was just a jumble of images. It had nothing to do with Prodigy. And it doesn't mean that they are about to release DS9 in HD. I think it's just, here's some nice footage. It's exciting. It's, you know, it's showed a space battle. And that was it. Don't read too much.
Yeah, if they're deciding what to put their money in, it's going to be in new production and not, you know, fixing versions of older shows.
Agreed. I'm going to go off on a tangent here. Okay, so one of the things, it's a totally separate thing, but when we looked at all of their original programming, there was some documentary things tied to other programming, right? So there's a lot of football, soccer documentaries they're going to be doing because there's a lot of that programming on Paramount Plus. There's a something called Real Criminal Minds because they're rebooting Criminal Minds. They're going to do a docuseries that's, you know, tied into that.
Yeah, they said like clips from the show, but also documentary stuff.
Right. So I'm hoping that they do documentary related to Star Trek because, you know, we've seen plenty of Star Trek documentaries and there's a Voyager one being made right now, which is actually going to be going out for crowdfunding on March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be too late for that one to be brought into the fold because knowing them, they'd want to completely control the thing from beginning. I mean, that thing already started shooting.
Yeah.
And it's a little kind of late, although, you know, but it would be nice to see them to take this approach of having documentaries on Paramount Plus tied to their other programming to Star Trek. Because even though there's been some great documentaries in the last decade, the Spock one and the Captains, and I don't think they've run out of documentary subjects for Star Trek.
No, and here's the thing. There's always been an appetite among fans for Star Trek documentaries, for anything that's behind the scenes, making of, insights, all of that. And I would hope that they're doing a lot of documenting as they make these new shows, because those will eventually be future documentary subjects. So when we were doing After Trek, I remember talking to the producers a lot then and saying, I knew they were taking pictures and posting them on social, but I kept saying, I hope you're documenting a lot of this stuff and keeping notes on even how you came up with ideas and how all these things happened, because fans are insatiable for it. I know that I am.
Well, and there is a show very much like that on Disney Plus, which is about the making of The Mandalorian, which is a very well-made show. especially the episode that gets into the technology. I learned a lot about how these AR walls work from that episode.
Cool. I might watch that. Even the Superman and Lois show that just premiered this week has a making of behind the scenes kind of special, which I haven't watched yet. But I did watch the Superman and Lois episode. But I think with Star Trek in particular, people are interested in all aspects of it. And I think fans are uniquely interested, like Star Wars fans, I would say both, in how those things are made and how decisions are made. And even just seeing cool behind the scenes footage of stuff happening. So I really hope that they're planning for some of that with the new shows and then looking back at ways they can tie all the shows together in a great documentary. Every time there is one, it's usually really fascinating. So I hope, I think that's a good point.
They have good people in the family. The Smithsonian Channel is part of Paramount Plus. There's a Smithsonian tab, and there is a good Star Trek documentary, actually Smithsonian did in 2016. So that's on CBS All Access right now. So hopefully this happens.
Yeah. That was a very worthy tangent.
Well, actually, I'm going to do another tangent.
Oh, good.
I mean, this is a minor thing, perhaps, but actually it's a big deal to me. And that is, we were talking about these tabs, right? And so when you currently go into CBS All Access, that there's these big tabs. So there's a CBS one and a Nickelodeon one and a Smithsonian one and a Comedy Central one and a BET one. So they're kind of organized around these major brands and studios, right? Whereas when you go into, say, Disney Plus, you'll have a Marvel tab and a Star Wars tab, right? And so one of the questions that came out of yesterday is, does Star Trek qualify? Because right now, Star Trek is inside of the CBS tab, right? All of the Star Trek content.
Right.
And in fact, now that there's, you know, this, and the Star Trek movies are over in the Paramount Pictures Movies tab, right? And they didn't have a definitive answer. But they said, if anything qualifies to move up to the top of the food chain, it would be Star Trek for them to create a Star Trek branded bucket or whatever you want to call it. Hub. I think they call them hubs. But I think that would be great because you'd have all the movies, the TV shows, the old shows, the new shows. You could throw in the William Shatner roast from Comedy Central. You got the Discovery documentary. I think they should do it. I don't think they're going to do it, but I think they should do it. Because, you know, the problem is once you do it with Star Trek, then they're like, okay, well, why isn't there a CSI tab? They have other, quote, franchises. But there's nothing, there's more Star Trek content on this app and more being generated than any other franchise.
Yep.
I'm hoping that, if not at launch, we eventually see a Star Trek hub. Okay, so tangent two.
If they're smart, they should do it at launch.
Yeah.
It's a smart play.
So let's go back to the subject of what's next after the, quote, five, the big five. So Section 31 is a possibility. There are multiple other things being discussed. I don't think anything's in development yet, but they're throwing ideas around. They've talked about a kids show. Kurtzman did say that the next thing they do, I want to get the exact quote because he didn't use, let's face it, he didn't use the best wording, right? For what he said would be the next show. Here's the quote. Whatever we do next is probably going... Okay, so he says... So, a little context. He talks about how things worked out well, they feel, with Star Trek. So, he says, in our live-action world, one thing we hear a lot from fans is how much they liked how we freed ourselves from canon in Discovery by jumping forward to a new timeline, right? So he uses timeline to incorrectly, right? Because when we think timeline,
right.
we think
Kelvin
timeline.
Prime. Yeah.
So he's using timeline when we think of era. So there's the TNG era, right? There was the TOS era, and there's kind of a new Discovery era, which is the 32nd century, right?
Right.
So he uses, and so when he says freed from canon in a new timeline, he doesn't mean Kelvin universe splintered timeline. He means just, you know,
way in the future. Yeah.
Just a century. No, it's kind of like, you know, when they did Enterprise, no, they hadn't done a 22nd century show. So they were freed from canon because it was all new, except for,
except it was a prequel. So they weren't freed from canon at all.
Exactly.
which is the mess Discovery got itself into and why they moved.
Right. So within that context of how he uses the phrase canon and timeline, okay, here's what he says. he says, whatever we do next is probably going to be in different timelines and different areas of the universe that haven't been explored before. A show that hasn't been dedicated to them. So that sounds to me like
they're Voyager?
Well, yeah, Voyager was a different place, but at the same time.
Right, but it didn't matter because they were so far away in a different place that all they took from the time period, of course, like this is what Starfleet is and this is where we are. And then they took them and sent them somewhere completely unfamiliar so they wouldn't have to worry about any of those things.
But let's say they did another 23rd to 24th century show in a different place. I still feel like there's not a lot of room in the galaxy, right? Because you've got, you know, there was a Delta Quadrant show. There's a Gamma Quadrant show, kind of. DS9 was Gamma Quadrant adjacent, right?
Wormhole adjacent.
Right. And then the Alpha and the Beta Quadrants are basically TOS and TNG especially, because the Federation's right close to the border of those. Pull out your Federation maps, everyone. Pull out your galaxy maps. You see what we're talking about. But there's not a lot of room in the galaxy. It's galaxy's a big place. They can just kind of define a new area. But I think if they go to a new area, my prediction would be they would go to an entirely new galaxy.
Yeah. Right?
You know, the Andromeda Galaxy, we got, you know, we know some people from there.
Right? Sure. We've met a few. People,
yes, they like to dehydrate people. but someplace where I would think if they did that, it would be like Voyager, where it wouldn't be where they were, you know, necessarily lost or trying to get back home. But it could be some kind of thing where they go to another galaxy to seek out new life and new civilizations, and it's not easy to get back, you know, so they can't, you know, call up Federation HQ every time they run into trouble. So I could see them doing that.
Right. And look, the Deep Space Nine model works too. Like setting it on a space station was a very different thing to do. And they could set something on a planet or somewhere that's remote where those things exist, but they're not really dealing with them on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly. So, and when he says new timelines and he really means new eras, I think there's a lot of room between the 25th century, which is where Picard is now, essentially, and the 32nd century. So, and some people will point out, you know, there's this nice big gap between the TOS movies and the beginning of Next Generation, which I think is called the Lost Years in the book series. So mm-hmm. what they're saying is, which is, of course, we don't know how this would relate to Section 31, because we were always thinking if they did a Section 31 show, it would be back in the 23rd century, back in the same area as Strange New Worlds. This could imply, because we know that they've probably done some thinking on that show and gone through a few different ideas, and they obviously sent Georgiou off on her own to some time that's, quote, like, what was the quote from Carl? Not too divergent or something. So
right. We know it has to be somewhere in the past when the mirror universe was closer.
Right. And we thought, well, like roughly when she left, but you know, there's some wiggle room there. They could go forward.
There's a lot of wiggle
years,
room
maybe.
In there. Yeah.
Plenty of wiggle room. Yeah.
They left themselves some options, which was smart.
But I suspect it wouldn't be surprised if the Section 31 show never happens. Okay, so let's put that out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either.
And, but if they want to have 5 active Star Trek shows, and if they want multiple live action shows, they're going to need something to come in when they're done with Picard. So they need something in 2 or 3 years, right? And so that's probably what they're looking at now.
Let's assume Discovery runs for, say, 7 years. A familiar number.
I wouldn't be surprised if they don't go all 7, but they could go. I mean, well, first of all, there's a rule. 7 is kind of this weird Star Trek rule.
Yeah.
Because of the Rick Berman era, as if there's some kind of magical thing about 7. So even though Discovery started before Picard, Picard will probably be the first show to wrap up of the live action. That assumes Discovery gets a 5th season, maybe a 6th, maybe a 7th, as you suggest. But I can't see it going beyond that.
I don't either.
Maybe they'll spin something off of it. Who knows?
The Saru show.
Yeah. So I like this idea that they're going to find something, you know, totally new. A new place and or a new time.
Yeah, I think so. They made it pretty clear that that's what they want to do.
Right. And place may not just be galactic, as you point out. It could be setting like DS9, you know. So, but your point is well taken that setting may not just be which quadrant of the galaxy or which galaxy, but which setting, planet side, station. They could do one in a, you know, there's always been these, you know, crazy, you know, Michael Dorn wants to do one set in the Klingon Empire, you know, and people have talked about why not they do a Star Trek medical show, you know, or.
Right. You could do a whole Romulans show. It's a really big universe, and there are a lot of areas to play in it where you could get creative and have some fun. You could pick something that nobody's heard of so that you don't have to worry about connecting things. You could pick something that was mentioned once in an episode. So there's a lot of freedom in there, and I'm actually pretty excited about the idea that they're going to keep doing more. I mean, it's been my dream since I was a little kid to one day write for Star Trek, and at various times I've been like, oh, there's no more Star Trek. Oh, there's no more. I'll never get to do it. Oh, it's gone. And now there's just so much. I feel like, oh, we can all renew our hopes.
And I think it, you know, because the fact that we're seeing Paramount Plus and Viacom CBS make decisions about what shows to stop and what shows to continue. If you look at a lot of their original programming, they've actually canceled quite a few original shows. There was that show called $1. Everyone's like, what? But look at your app. You'll find it. They did one season of that. They did 2 seasons of The Twilight Zone. So the fact that there's 5 Star Trek shows happening now, and there aren't other seasons of Strange Angel, you know, shows that in their mind, it's working. And they want more, and they want to keep the show going.
They could also do the thing you've suggested, which is a miniseries, like a specifically limited event series, which is another great way to go. And at this point, they're looking at all the different platforms. I mean, they even said maybe we could even do a show that would be on BET. Like they're very willing to look at different audiences for different types of shows.
They made it clear anything they do will be on Paramount Plus, but they could kind of make a show that's geared for the BET audience, would maybe appear on BET and Paramount Plus, like Prodigy is going to appear on Paramount Plus and Nickelodeon. They mentioned, you know, maybe a Showtime show, which I guess would be, you know, more adult oriented, I would guess. A BET show. I mean, that would be interesting, right? Like, let's say they were doing DS9 now. They would make it even more focused on the Sisko family. Mm-hmm. And you know, I could see, you know, a great show about African-Americans in space, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone says DS9 is one of the best shows for African-Americans and African-American family, but what if they took it even further? You know, and I think that's quite possible. But then you start looking at the rest of the portfolio like, oh, something that works for MTV, you know, something that works, you know, I'm not sure I want to see that. personally.
Well, especially because we don't really know what MTV is these days.
Exactly.
Comedy Central. I mean, obviously, Lower Decks is a Comedy Central, has a Comedy Central vibe to it.
Yeah. So there may be limits to, but Alex uses phrase like a rainbow of offerings and niche offerings. So they're open to narrow casting a Star Trek show, as opposed to, I think Discovery is their kind of attempt at a broadest appeal. I feel like that's one of the reasons why they stopped using the F-bombs in the show in season three. And they've made it lighter, is that they don't want it to be this kind of dark, brooding show. They want it as wide as possible, especially that you've got Picard to be their, quote, adult show now. And there was lots of F-bombs on that. And I was actually okay with that, because that's what that show was. Whereas I don't like the F-bombs on Discovery, and I'm glad that they stopped doing them.
For me, that's always about character, but I know what you mean.
So even though there was a lot of news yesterday, there's still a lot of questions about what's next for Star Trek. Except that things are looking up, and it looks like, you know, if it weren't for COVID, the Star Trek train would just have never stopped, you know, starting last summer. It's just that, you know, the world happened.
Right.
So we're taking this pause, but it's going to pick up again. And then, in theory, never stop.
Our Star Trek cup runneth over. There will be lots and lots of it. So all have right. we covered? I think we've covered all the new news.
I can't believe it took an entire show, but I guess there's a lot to cover this time.
Yeah.
Before we wrap things up, let's do our Trek bits of the week. Mine is very short. Last week we saw something very exciting.
Yeah.
Like many Star Trek fans, I'm a space nerd. A lot of us on Team Trek Movie are, especially
yeah.
Kayla, who works for NASA, and her husband, Andy, who's a member of the team as well. So last week, Mars Perseverance landed on Mars, which was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that was amazing.
If you watch the live stream, you'll notice that it was narrated by Dr. Swati Mohan. I think that's how you pronounce her name. And a story came out about her last week. She emigrated to the U.S. from India when she was 1 year old, and she was inspired by Star Trek when she was a kid at age 9. And that led her to go on to study science and eventually get her PhD from MIT, which is not too shabby. So she's my Trekkie of the week.
I love it. Exciting. And all that footage was so great. It was thrilling to watch. So mine for this week is quite a bit older. You knew the minute you posted this, I think you're the one who posted it in our Trek Movie Slack. You must have known I was going to choose this. But it's from 1995, and it is a segment of Kate Mulgrew being interviewed on Conan O'Brien. And she walks out on that set, and she owns it. She has the most fantastic suit on that I just love, this pantsuit. But she immediately, she walks in, she owns the room, she's, you know, bonding with Conan over their Irish Catholic families. She's sort of challenging him and unnerving him, but going along with him and appreciating him. She says his name a lot, which she did to me when I interviewed her, and it always works. But she makes fun of her own voice. She does an Irish jig. She talks about being in love. There's everything about that segment is just mesmerizing. And I assume when she talks about being in love that she's talking about the Star Trek director, Rick Colby. Was seeing at the time. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's when they were involved. She says, I'm happier than I've ever been before. But it's such a great segment. If you want to know the 70 billion reasons I love her, they're all in that segment.
And it's a little bit of early internet history. It's 1990. It's the first year of Voyager. And she talks about she doesn't use the word, but basically being trolled on the internet by people who don't like your voice or don't like this or that. And, you know, it's the old joke of the internet was invented for people to complain about Star Trek. And she was dealing with that which was something new.
They're like, some guy on the internet said that, I think is what Conan says.
Right. You know, because that was, you know, this is way before Twitter, right? But that was a new thing for actors to deal with, was this kind of immediate feedback.
Unpleasant. Negative feedback. That was the point of it.
It's all negative. Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll have a link to that in the show notes and on the site. So check that out.
And that's it for the week. So please come to the site. Would love to know what you guys think of all these new shows and which one you're looking forward to the most and what you think they should explore. I mean, if the Star Trek universe is yours to play in, what do you want to see? And we'll also ask you again to give us a review on iTunes. It would help us a lot.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.